For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply. For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
Unlock a new era in podcasting with Unfiltered Studios. Ready to break free from the ordinary? Dive into a world where authenticity meets innovation. Our network isn't just about podcasts. It's a revolution. From nostalgia to movies, sports to self-improvement, find your favorite podcast in an array of diverse shows, only at Unfiltered Studios. Join the movement. Subscribe to Unfiltered Studios today and join the podcasting revolution. Unfiltered Studios, where every voice finds its place. Visit unfpod.com today to find your favorite show.
Unfiltered Studios will help you press record.
And hello, movie lovers and fellow greasers and socks. Welcome to our review of The Outsiders. I have Beth with me from the Made for Movie TV podcast. We're here to review The Outsiders. It's a privilege to be able to have Beth back on the show with me again. And let's go ahead, let's review this, and let's do it, guys. And hey, Beth, how are you?
I'm great, Tom. Thanks for having me on again.
Oh, you're welcome. I'm glad that you decided to come on the show and everything to talk about The Outsiders.
I'm so excited.
I've been looking forward to this review for a while now. I know that we scheduled it about a week ago, and then we had stuff that kept on coming up, and then finally we're able to do it.
Yay! Yeah, this was, I think I told you this earlier, but I had just turned 14 when this movie came out, and I had been saving up my babysitting money so that I could see it multiple times, because back then, the way they marketed it was to just put all these cute boys in the teen magazines, which I read, like Teen Beat, and I don't even remember the name of a lot of them, but I read a lot of those, like, you know, that had like the teen idols and stuff like that. And
right,
they really,
like Tiger Beat magazines,
right,
and stuff.
Exactly. I had like three or four posters in my room of The Outsiders. I mean, it was a really big deal for, a sixth or I guess I would have been seventh or eighth grader and all my friends. So we were super excited when this one came out.
I imagine so. And that's something I wanted to talk to you about, too, as far as nostalgia goes and stuff. And where did you find yourself as for nostalgia as far as best out of 10? Where were you whenever this movie first came out? And I know that you said you were excited about it, but from reading it I know you probably also read the book. So that's being said, how did it feel to know that what you read on the page was about to go on ahead and be on the screen?
Well, I mean, that's the really exciting part, because when I read the book, I think it's typically, my kids read it in sixth or seventh grade. So I would have read it about the same time. So probably less than a year, I read the book. And then, because I read it for school the first time, but of course my copy was dog-eared. I read it from beginning to end. I was a huge reader. I mean, I still am. But it still remains one of my favorite books, even though I haven't read it for a while. And I think because of the nostalgia of it. So seeing the movie, man, we just were like so excited, you know, and back then none of us could drive. So we had to get one mom to drive us, one mom to pick us up. And, you know,
how that goes.
There's a big nostalgia. And because like Pony Boy, the actor, C. Thomas Howell, he was my age. So I was the same age as a lot of the, you know, a relative age of a lot of the characters in the book. And of course, he was in E.T., so I knew most of the actors were not new, but some of them, like Rob Lowe, was just up and coming. So most of them were pretty recognizable as actors already. So, I mean, just the fact that Coppola got this incredible group of actors together in one film was amazing. And when I watched it again, I was so struck by how good they all are at their jobs.
Same here. Like, I know that Ralph Macchio's, this was actually his first role.
Right. And I think it was his first feature film, but he had been, now I'm going to tell you a little bit of knowledge that nobody needs to know, but I love the TV show called Eight is Enough. I don't know if you've ever heard of it. He was on a season of Eight is Enough the year before The Outsiders came out.
Okay. I didn't know that. I didn't know that little piece of information. Okay. So out of 10, how do you feel about it nostalgically?
10, or like 100. It's way up there for me because just because of the timing of when it came out and how old I was, and you know, I didn't really have a life like the characters, either set of characters, not the greasers or the socias, but just their ages. And so for me, it was the anticipation of going. I mean, I still think about all that and going to the theater and, you know, it just, there was so much nostalgia for me.
I can imagine. For me, you know, I was introduced to this. I know that we talked about this backstage, but I was introduced to this movie about 3 years ago when my wife and I was just dating. She's like, "You never seen The Outsiders?" I was like, "No." She goes, "What the hell is wrong with you?" I said, "A lot." But, you know, I know that Ralph Macchio was in this movie. So I'm like, okay, Emilia Estevez. You also have Tom Cruise. You have Patrick Swayze. I said, sign me up. I'll watch this.
Right.
So we ended up watching this on HBO Max at the time.
Okay.
And now I watched it on Plex with the extended version, which we'll get into a little bit later because I have a lot to complain about. But I'm going to have to give this, and it's no discredit to the movie or anything like that. It's just that my mom never showed me this movie when I was a young kid. Otherwise, I would actually appreciate it and have the same love that you have for it.
Yeah.
But for me, my bar is a little bit lower, probably like maybe an A on this, because of the fact that, you know, I wasn't shown this.
Yeah. So
maybe under like fresh eyes as an adult versus me doing it like I normally do as a kid. But yeah. I love the casting. As soon as my wife told me about the cast, I'm like, sign me up. Rob Lowe, Emilia Estevez, Patrick Swayze, sign me up. I'm in. I'm dialed in already. Let's do it.
Yeah, and it's amazing because just because of the how bright all of them, I mean, they all just became superstars with a couple of exceptions. Like C. Thomas Howell he made a couple of feature films after this, and he's been working steadily, and in fact, I think he was in Reagan, which came out in 2024, but he did not have the trajectory, say, of Tom Cruise or Rob Lowe, which always surprised me because he had the talent. But it's such a great film, and there's so much talent. And, you know, Diane Lane is in it as well, which is kind of fun to go back and see her. She hasn't really aged that much, honestly. I mean, obviously, she's changed a lot, but, like, you can still see
her. You can still see that Diane Lane, right.
Yeah, I love Diane Lane. I still do. Anything she's in, I try to see. So it was really fun. But going back and watching it as an adult was really, I felt very, I don't know, it moved me. It moved me very, very much, much more so than it did when I was a kid.
That's great, though.
Yeah.
Because it also moved me as well and stuff like that. We'll get into the stuff that I really enjoyed about this film in a minute. Yeah. I just want to bring up some of the trivia that I had found about this film. And, you know, I found the extended version. I didn't mean to stumble across it. It just happened. By the way, if you guys watch this on Plex, I recommend that you don't do what I did. I'm like, oh, okay, it's The Outsiders. I'll watch it. And it's the stupid director's cut. And I had major beef with it. because it overshadows the dialogue of every single character that's talking. You have this 1950s music that's supposed to enhance the experience because it's the director's experience. It sucks.
Yeah.
Watch the theatrical version. Because in an extended opening scene where Ponyboy is attacked by the Sox when walking home from a Paul Newman movie, the principal greasers are also introduced later on, but Ponyboy and Soda Pop talk to each other in the bedroom. So there's an extended scene on that. A scene where Ponyboy asked some farmers how to reach Jay Mountain. He claims that he's playing army and needs to report it to base.
Mm-hmm. That was in the book.
That was in the book?
That scene was in the book that I remember. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. The way that they actually have this is like the novel edition. So that's basically what they were going for with the theatrical cut. And it also adds 22 minutes of additional footage as well and a new soundtrack for the 2005 special edition, which contains re-edit cuts of the film.
Yeah, the 30 seconds you showed me, I was like, what are they saying? Because all you can hear, like you said, it's like a music video. It's so bizarre.
It really is, and it takes you out of the movie to the point it's like, I don't want to suffer through this.
Yeah.
Like, I'd rather get a root canal than listen than listen to this.
I just loved watching it. I was like, oh, it's over. And I cried. But we'll talk about that as we talk about the scene.
Right. And like I said, that's just my beef with the extended version, right? It doesn't have anything to do with the movie because I love the movie. It's just the whole entire emotional damage of me trying to watch this movie and everything is just too loud.
Yeah, that was bad.
There's also an extended reading of Gone with the Wind in the church. There's a short scene with Ponyboy finds Tom sitting on his couch in the morning. Small extension to Ponyboy and 2-Bit at the hospital where a doctor allows them access to Johnny's room after being denied entrance by a nurse. Then I want to get into this. So a scene where Ponyboy runs into Cherry at school, but she walks away from Ponyboy's teacher, also informs him that he's flunking, but also allows him to write a paper on a personal experience in order to raise his grade. There's also a courtroom scene where Cherry, Randy, and Ponyboy all make statements. In the end, Ponyboy is acquitted and left in the custody of Derry.
Mm-hmm. And I think the paper he was allowed to write, I think, is that little bit at the beginning and the end where he says, mm-hmm. when I walked out of the darkness of the movie theater, when he leaves the Paul Newman film, and then at the end of the movie when he starts writing, I'm pretty sure that's the paper that he was writing for that. But like I said, it's been a long time since I've read the book, but I'm pretty sure that those scenes were in the book and they kept it really close to the movie. I mean, as close as a novel has been adapted, that The Outsiders is it.
Okay. I just want to give a shout out to my friend Chris. He's actually in the chat right now on Instagram. Thank you. Haven't watched The Outsiders in so long. I'll have to rewatch it to remember it. Don't worry. Hopefully we'll help you with a little bit of that wrinkle in your brain as I'm diving into this. And hopefully that you will enjoy my review for our review for this. So with that being said, we talked about it nostalgically. We also went on ahead, talked a little bit of trivia. Now we're going to get rid of the nostalgia because that's just a thing now. Now it's us watching it as an adult, even though I was already an adult whenever I saw this movie 3 years ago.
Rubbing into me that I'm old and you're not. What is with that,
I am
John?
So sorry, Beth. I'm sorry. How rude of me.
I'm just kidding.
I'm joking.
You can't help it that I'm old.
Well, I just turned 40, if that counts.
You're still so young. You're a youngster.
I don't know. My check engine light's not on. Just the maintenance required light is on right now. So
mine too. Mine's been on for 15 years.
All right. So let's see here. Faint rumble. Okay. So in a world where staying gold is harder than finding a gas station with cheap prices, where greasers rule the streets and socks have unlimited hair gel.
Stay gold? Pony boy.
Two podcasters dared to ask the most important question of all. Would we survive in Pony Boy's gang, or would we be running home crying for our moms?
Let's do it for Johnny, man. We'll do it for Johnny.
Tonight, we dive into the world of Switchblade's Brotherhood in the most dramatic sunset steers in cinema history. So grab your leather jacket, slick back that hair, and for the love of all things 80s, stay gold, Pony Boy. Stay gold. All right, let's get into it before a sock shows up and ruins everything. So, with that being said, in 1965, Tulsa, Oklahoma, the Greasers are a gang of tough, low-income teens that include Pony Boy Curtis, which is Hal, and his two older brothers, Soda Pop and Daryl, as well as Johnny Cade, Dallas Winston, Keith Two-Bit Matthews, and Steve Randell. Their rivalry is the is with the Sox, pronounced Sochers, a gang of wealthier kids. Five of the Sox jumped Pony Boy and cut his neck with a switchblade. Johnny had simply attacked the month before. Two Sox, Bob Shelton, Garrett, and Randy Adderson, confront Johnny, Pony Boy, and Two-Bit, who are talking to the Sox. Sox's girlfriends, Sherry and Marissa, at the drive-in. The girls defuse the situation by going home with the Sox. Later that night, Pony Boy and Johnny are attacked in a park by Bob, Randy, and two other Sox. They begin dunking Pony Boy in a fountain, but Johnny pulls out his switchblades and stabs Bob in killing him. So what I liked about this was, okay, Beth, is the fact it has this whole entire introduction to these characters for the very first time. So if you're not someone that actually grew up with this or anything like that, you already get a chance to actually get to know their humor, what they're about, and the chemistry between all of them. And at first, you're not sure if this chemistry is going to work with them, especially with Ralph Macchio. Kind of sticks out for me because I've seen him as the Karate Kid.
Right,
so I
right.
told my wife this. If I didn't see The Karate Kid and I saw this first, I wouldn't even think of him being part of The Karate Kid. This would be my movie. This would be right. the movie that introduced me to Ralph Macchio. Mm-hmm. And I really love the dynamic between them. You actually get the background of these characters, that they're really great brothers together. They'll stand up for each other. They break each other's balls all the time. And then also, too, I also love the movie theater opening scene as well, because that's like us watching them on screen as they're watching something on screen, too. So I really love the opening for this movie.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I forgot, like, when Johnny and Pony Boy meet up with Dally, Dally is like, "We're early," and I had forgotten. I kept thinking, what were they doing? What did they go do? What did they go do? And then when they snuck in under the gate, I love that. But, it, you know, they're kind of running around, and I thought it was a really great way for Coppola to set the scene of where they are and what their lives are like without a lot of dialogue, right? You just see them kind of hustling around, and then they give those kids a hard time, and
right.
you know, you can tell obviously maybe by the way they're dressed, but you get a feeling for the world that they live in,
right? Because you can definitely tell that these kids don't come the best lifestyle or anything like that at all. They don't wear the best clothes or anything. They probably smell. You can probably smell them on screen because of how they are. But at the same time, though, I love how they know who they are. They know that they're not going to wind up climbing out from the grease to be a sock.
Right.
And this is they are who they are.
Right. And Pony Boy especially is very, he is not jaded quite yet by the world. And you get a sense that he can hold his own if he gets into a fight and whatever. But I mean, there's a couple of really gentle moments where he's sort of leaning up against Johnny at the fire where they have, you know, where he falls asleep and then he goes home and Daryl is mad at him. I wish they would have shown a little bit more of Pony Boy at home, because in the book they really did have a really strong bond. And I think you find that out in the end, but I kind of wish they had shown it a little more in the beginning, because, you know, the impression you get is that Pony Boy thinks Daryl hates him, and that's not really, I don't think that's really how he felt.
Right. And no, it actually now this is something that I do appreciate with the extended version. They do give us a little bit more of the home life of Pony Boy. and also the love between Patrick Swayze's character and him.
Yeah.
And, you know, whenever he yells at him and stuff like that, he goes, where were you? You were out all night and everything. Where were you? Oh, we fell asleep. Oh, yeah, you fell asleep. Well, good. I'm glad that you fell asleep. And now you decided to come home.
Right.
And you come to a realization that Patrick Swayze's character had to grow up fast.
Right. He had no choice. And
I liked how they actually captured this, though, too, is like their parents are dead. Mm-hmm. He's there to raise all these kids. And he doesn't have a life of his own. He's sacrificing his own needs and wants to take care of his brothers. He's becoming the adult.
Right. And especially we see that later on where, and we'll talk about this. We can talk about it later. But at the Rumble, we really see how Daryl's life sort of went a different direction. But he's still really, really hardworking. You know, at least he hasn't gone off to, you know, make poor decisions. I mean, he's really trying hard to keep. At least keep Ponyboy in school, because I think Soda Pop had dropped out by this point and was also working full time, but he was also working hard. But the dynamic in the house and the friends coming and going, I love that. It felt like, I don't want to read too much into it, but it really feels like they just created their own family, these people, out of necessity.
Right. It's like they don't have family of their own but themselves.
Or they don't have parents. I mean, we can see that with Johnny. His parents don't care about him at all. And I don't think they really ever say much about Dally, but that he came from somewhere else, but they don't really say much about his parents or anything. But he clearly was going down the wrong path and making kind of a lot of poor decisions, but they loved him anyway.
Right. And that's something that I like, is the fact that, you know, they don't have any family of their own. And so, therefore, now they're leaning on other people around this town to actually fill that hole that they have to be a family. And it's kind of like starting like a motorcycle club in a sense.
Right.
Where they all represent each other within that little small neighborhood. And all of them are greasers together.
Agreed.
So I like how they have that.
Yeah, I did too. And the dynamic between them all. I mean, they all really deeply care for one another. And they're always going to, they're worried about each other's safety because clearly they're not living in the best neighborhood, and it's sort of dangerous. Of course, the Socias are dangerous as well, but like there's that one kind of running character, Tim, that is kind of having a beef with Dallas. And actually, I can't remember, there's another, at least one other film that Matt Dillon was in by Effie Hinton, but he didn't play Dallas, he played a different character. But I think Tim, that character, was in that film as well. Are in that book and film. So, but he has a very small part in this one, but you can tell there's just a lot of contention. It's almost like they get mad at each other, beat each other up, and then move on, and they're fine.
Right, because remember, like, towards the end of it, one of the brothers says, hey, I'm tired of you guys fighting. I'm tired of choosing sides all the time.
Yeah.
You know, and you can definitely tell these brothers love each other, and they all, you know, brothers are always going to get under each other's skin because they're blood. So and they can also fight, they can make up with each other and then do it all over again the next day.
Right.
But you mentioned one thing about one of the brothers quitting school. He winds up becoming an attendant for a gas station.
What was it called? The DMX or DVX or?
Yeah, something like that.
I've never heard of the chain, but it must be some kind of chain that maybe was popular in the 60s down south or something. Have you ever been to Tulsa, John? I've never been.
No, I've never been. But it makes me want to go check out the sightings sent me.
Yeah. I want to go to that. The Curtis House is a museum. I really want to go see that.
That would be fun to go to be honest with you. I know another podcast that, and this is just an example, but, you know, I know someone that went to the Goonies house and they did a podcast in the Goonies house.
Yes.
So it would be cool to actually go to the museum, but also to do a podcast episode of something like that and do something like that. I think it would be fun. But, you know, I would love to see how much the whole entire place has changed or hasn't changed. But from what we saw with the pictures that you sent me, that is still pretty much the same.
Yeah, it looks exactly the same. I think the I think the gas station, if you look closely at the picture, it looks empty now. So I think that might also be like somebody must, I don't know if it's a museum as well, you can go through it, but it looks so small, but I think they just preserved it because of the movie.
Wow, that's pretty cool.
But I'm not sure. I haven't really looked into it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it just looks, it's amazing. And then I don't know. So when I was growing up, we had a Rexall Drugs. It was a chain. There was one in my town. So I remember seeing that in the movie and going, oh, we have a Rexall, because at the time it was still open. It's no longer there. But it was like cool because it's like, oh, we have one of those.
You know, we had one too. We actually had one in Louisiana over in Bogalusa. Okay. We had one. So I'm like, I actually know that reference. So it was actually pretty cool to see that. I'm like, okay, so this has been going on since the 80s and everything with the store being around.
Yeah, so I wonder how long it's been around. I have to do some research in that too. It's probably one of those drugstores that opened in like the 30s and just stuck around. Wonder if there's any left. I don't know that they're the picture we saw, if that's also just a storefront now or if that's actually still a drugstore. I didn't look.
But you know what, though? The other thing that I wanted to bring up is like, I love the small town feel of this movie as well, because I feel like if they put this in a city, big city thing, it does not work. I love the look of it. And even in the book, I'm sure that it's also like a small town where everybody knows each other.
Yeah, I think it might be Tulsa, but I'm not 100% sure if the book is the setting is the same, but it's got to be similar, if not the same, because the book really doesn't stray that much from the movie doesn't stray that much from the book. So I think they were probably careful to keep it in. And I think the author was in high school when she wrote the book. So she probably wrote what she knew, right? So it probably was her hometown.
I wouldn't be surprised. That'd be pretty cool. Like, you actually do get some people that are the greasers that are real like greasers and real like socks.
Can you imagine writing a book in high school that people are still talking about 50? I mean, it's more than 50. It's probably 60 or 70 years. But the author, S.E. Hinton, she loved the TV show Supernatural, and she was in it every season. Like, once.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
I know. I was like, no way, because I like Supernatural too.
That's pretty neat, though. I like the fact that this book still has legs. It still has that whole entire deal of people talking about it, because some books are like, okay, you put it down and people forget about it.
Right.
But with hers, you know, everybody, I feel like this is on everybody's high school agenda to read this book and then to watch the movie later.
It's one of the few novels that one of my kids really enjoyed. Otherwise, he's never read. He doesn't like to read, but he loved The Outsiders. In fact, at dinner, he's staying with us temporarily, and he's like, because they're adults, and I'm like, oh yeah, I'm gonna talk about The Outsiders. Or Mike, my husband, said, what are you guys talking about tonight? I said, The Outsiders, and Jack goes, where is that from? I'm like, dude, it's the one book you liked.
That's funny. My question though too is like, what did you think the whole entire thing with Sherry, with them getting sneaking into the drive-in and stuff? Because that reminds me of me, but sneaking into a movie theater to see my movies that I want to see. But also too, Pony Boy, I believe, goes to the movies to forget about the outside world that he lives in, because his world is so chaotic around him to the point where he needs a little bit of that TLC of just basically just letting things just breathe a little bit. Where you can just forget about things. But that's why he buries himself in books and movies. But I really love the whole entire thing of sneaking in. And then they sit behind Sherry. You have Dylan that's in there. He winds up saying some stuff to Sherry as well. But I'll let you go on ahead and talk.
Yeah, I think it was a really I really liked the scene. And you know watching it that it's like a once in a lifetime situation for them, because normally Sherry wouldn't have sat in the seats, right? But her boyfriend gets drunk, and so she goes to sit in the seats, and that's how they all end up talking. And it's just so interesting, because they all knew who each other were. They all go to school together, and yet they probably have never had a conversation. And so I think Ponyboy and Cherry got along really, really well. And of course, Two Bit comes over and he's kind of sassy and Dally's kind of a jerk. And but then she says, oh, I hope I never see Dally again. I might fall in love with him, which I think confused Ponyboy because I think he thought maybe they were getting along. It was a little bit confusing, but I just love that scene because you just know that those people are never going to be in that situation again. And then, of course, Emilio Estevez's character is just delayed with the laughing and just jokey. He's so jokey. He kind of lightens the mood in that movie.
He does. He lightens the mood in this. And also, too, like you mentioned, the fact that this would be like the last time that they actually sit down together to have a few laughs and, you know, and just flirt with this one girl, Cherry, and that's it. It's like that light in that darkness of, you know, something bad is going to happen later on.
Right.
Where, you know, they have to go their separate ways and do their own adventure.
Yeah.
And, you know, I really love the whole entire deal of that setup of, you know, him where you actually have Dallas saying those derogatory things to her.
Yeah.
And then later on, she's like, you know what? I kind of like him. And,
yeah.
You know, I think it's the fact that everybody loves the bad boy type.
Right.
And that's why Ponyboy is kind of thrown off with it. It's like, what the fuck? Like,
yeah.
I look, I'm not that kind of guy.
Yeah.
I'm not that kind of person. I'm more reserved. I'm more quiet. I don't really flirt. I don't really say derogatory things. So what's wrong with me?
Right.
So it's like,
yeah. When he was talking, yeah, when Dallas was talking to her too, I actually was thinking to myself, did I know what he was talking about? You know, like about the red hair and he was being kind of nasty. I don't know. I don't remember if I even understood what he was saying. Cause I mean, I was pretty young and naive, so I'm not sure I understood that context, but I knew he was being a jerk.
Right. He was just being a jerk to Cherry.
Yeah, because I think he was doing it to get attention. I mean, I got the impression that he's the kind of guy that could get any gal on his side of town, but she was a challenge.
Right, and that's what bad boys like. They like the challenge. They like
right on.
The thrill of the hunt, you know?
Right. And there was nobody there to, like, tell him to stop it. I mean, Johnny and Ponyboy were kind of telling him to stop it, but I mean, like, her boyfriend was still getting drunk in the car, whatever he was doing, and then now I can't remember what Bob's friend's name was that was with them. That was the one that Ponyboy talks to in the car later on. I forget what his name was. Was it Tony? No, I can't remember. Anyway.
I think.
Bob's friend. They were just getting drunk anyway, so.
But yeah, I thought that was pretty good. And then you get into that whole entire, now you're getting into the whole entire plot of that darkness that we mentioned, where, you know, the girls basically they meet up with Ponyboy, and like, look, you know, I don't want to fight. I don't like fights. I don't like this at all. I don't want no confrontation. And the next thing you know it, the boyfriend comes out of the car and he starts drowning Ponyboy in the fountain.
Right. And when was it that he saw, I can't remember. It was earlier before that scene where Johnny saw the ring, right? That Bob was wearing the ring and he realized that it was actually Bob who beat him up.
Yeah.
Remember how you talked about that? And I think that happened. Did that happen at the movie theater or sometime?
That happened before. Yeah,
yeah.
That happened before everything.
Yeah. So he already was, I mean, Johnny was probably terrified when he saw that car coming again. And then they were so drunk. The Socias were so drunk, those guys, just driving around looking for them. And obviously they were easy to find because they were hanging out at the park. And Ponyboy and Johnny were terrified. Like, they didn't really know what to do. What they probably should have done was run, but maybe they just didn't think that they were in any danger because they were also on top of the playground equipment.
Yeah.
And those guys could have, I don't know. It's so sad because you know what's happening when you're watching it. And yet when it still happens, it's pretty shocking.
Right. Because here's the thing. I think they figured, okay, well, if we run, we're not going to be able to outrun them because they have their car.
Right. They have the
car. So we might as well just stay where we are.
Right.
You know, even though this is not going to end well, probably, at least we can go out fighting.
Right.
Because this gang has been, they've been fighting for years, it seems like. So it's like, okay, well, we'll just go out fighting and we'll go back the next day doing what we normally do.
Right. the haves and the have-nots, right? That's what the whole basis of the story is, right? The haves and the have-nots, and
right,
and they're always going to be at odds, and maybe today they still are, right? Nobody knew that in that moment, all of their lives were going to change in a way that they never expected it to change.
Exactly. None of them knew that, you know, that when Ralph Macchio winds up stabbing the guy and, you know, stabbing the Bob. Guy's letting his, yeah, Bob.
Pretty sure it was Bob that he killed, right?
He killed Bob. But, you know, he didn't think that he was going to have to do that. But he knew that Pony Boy was in trouble, so therefore he had to do what he had to do.
Right, and, he did.
And, you know, being that young, you're not going to know not to run because you just murdered somebody. Your first thought is like, oh, shit, I'm in trouble with the cops.
Yeah.
So
I think Bob really would have killed Pony Boy if Johnny hadn't killed him.
I think so, too.
In my opinion, because he was drowning. And Bob was so drunk, he just really had no idea what he was doing.
No.
And now we have Pony Boy waking up, like, what just happened? Johnny's freaking out because he's like, what just happened? And Bob is laying there dead.
Right, because I like how the camera angle does this, though, Beth, where you actually see the blood inside the water.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't actually see what's happened until he wakes up.
Right.
And then you realize, oh, shit, he killed somebody.
Right.
He killed Bob. And it's like, now we have to run from the law. We need to find a place to hide out. We need a place to go to figure out what we're going to do. So what do? They go to Dally.
They get a glimpse of Dally's world that they're not a part of because Dally's a little bit older, a little bit wiser, and he hangs out with an older crowd. So they go to it was a house party, not a bar, right?
Right, it was a house party that Dally was having.
And they were all adults there, it looked like. Most of them.
Yeah, it was all adults. Yeah. They're not used to this. You can actually tell the look on Pony Boy. He's like, what the hell?
He's looking around, okay. I've never seen this many women in one room before, you know? Yeah,
right.
They didn't go in. They knocked on the door because clearly they didn't know if they should go in. And, you know, as it turns out, Dallas is trying to sleep, so... But Dallas, even though he makes bad decisions, he's very smart, right? He's the one that came up with the plan to send Johnny and Pony Boy to the mountain.
Right, exactly. He's like, look, here's $50. Here's a gun for you to defend yourselves with. There's a little church up on the mountain. Go to that and I'll come to you.
Your old or broken phone can let you down when you need it most.
Perfect.
But at Verizon, trade in any old phone from our top brands and get the most for it, up to $2,000 in value, for an amazing new iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence and a new line on my plan, and iPad and Apple Watch Series 10. That's like a 3-for-1. And you can get it on any plan. At Verizon, trade in your old phone for a brand new iPhone 16 Pro, iPad, and Apple Watch. The other guys won't give you that. Visit Verizon.com today. Additional terms apply. Service plan required for Apple Watch and iPad. Up to $2,000 value based on iPhone, iPad, and Apple Watch. For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to leave up holiday decorations year-round. Others have the need to use their garage as practice space for their new metal band. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.
And he said, do not cause attention to yourselves or anything, and you have a place to stay. Make sure you also take the train as well to go to the mountain to where the church is. So he had their backs, even though he just got out of prison himself. Because remember, he also just got out of prison. So there's also a target on his back in case if anything happens, though, too. So he's kind of crossing a boundary of, like, being an accomplice to murder.
Right.
But he also knows that his brothers need him, so therefore he's going to go on ahead and do this for him.
Right, and I think that I think that Dally was really having a hard time. Even he was like, did you really do this? Like, I don't think he really believed that it was going to happen, because, or it happened, because in any other circumstance, neither one of them would have made that decision, in my opinion. So,
no, because
he had to come up with that. But when they went to the train, that was really tension filled when those guys were looking, you know, and they had to hop this train. It really felt tense. Like, what if they find them? And I don't know, just if there's so much tension in that 10 minutes of that movie with the fight and then going to the getting directions from Dallas and then going to the train, and then they get up to the mountain and it's this serene kind of beautiful place, not the church, it's falling apart,
right.
But the setting is gorgeous,
right? And that's what I want to talk to you though too, with the train scene too, is everything happens all at one time, because right. There's so, and it's not the pacing of the film or anything like that, it's not rushed, but you feel that the whole entire tense moment of them, like, I have to hide with them. It's like, what are we going to do? What are we going to do?
Yeah.
And so they're hurrying just as we're hurrying to see what's going to happen. And it's this adrenaline rush of them trying to get to the train, hiding out from them. I really loved how they did this, whereas like it feels like it's just been a couple of hours, and then you're having to go on a train ride that you didn't even expect to go on. And right. You have anxiety. You don't sure what they're going to expect, they're not sure what they're going to expect. And I love the whole entire tension build up. And also too, like you mentioned, you know, it's a beautiful scenery. Scenery itself, with cinematography for that, aside from the church, is beautiful.
Yeah, it is. It is gorgeous. It's so beautiful. And like, you know, and then they go up there and they do these remarkably innocent things, like chase rabbits, you know?
Right.
I mean, they just kind of become boys because they don't have any cares up there, right? They're just kind of living day to day and they don't really have anything to do or anybody around. So they just kind of, you know, read books and and hang out like kids almost.
Exactly. It's like, you know what? There's no adults here to tell us what to do or anything. We don't have a solid plan other than wait on Dally. So we might as well do what we do best, which we can just joke around and just be kids for a change.
Right. And I think that's the first time that Johnny really sees the sunset.
Right. It's like showing the innocence of them for once. Because, you know, when you first get introduced to them, they feel like they're so grown up because of how the ages are within the brothers themselves.
Right.
That makes them also feel like they're also grown up as well. Because they have to be, therefore they also have to act like they're grown up.
Yeah,
but this one, they get to drop their guard.
Yeah, they have so much responsibility. And in Johnny's case, he just comes from such a terrible home life.
Like, exactly.
You get a really tiny glimpse of it before they go to the park, which is how they end up at the park, because his parents are fighting and he just can't take it anymore. So, you know, you get to see this sort of different dynamic between Ponyboy and Johnny, but their bond is strong. I mean, it's, they are like brothers in a lot of ways, and they're growing up together.
Exactly. And that's something I really loved, is the chemistry between the two of them. It has that brother, even though you're not blood, you can still be brothers.
Right on. And
they would actually take a bullet for each other.
Right.
You can actually believe that because of the whole entire dynamic. Because, you know, on the advice that Dallas and stuff like that, Ponyboy and Johnny leave town and hide out to the abandoned church and Windrexville. Ponyboy dyes his hair blonde with peroxide in case anybody spots him. He reads Gone with the Wind and quotes the Robert Frost poem, "Nothing gold can stay." Dallas arrives with news that Sherry has offered to support the boys in court. They go out for food. They return to find the church on fire with children trapped inside. Johnny is hospitalized with severe burns and a broken back after he and Ponyboy and Dallas rescued the children. The boys are praised by their heroism, but Johnny is charged with manslaughter for killing Bob, while Ponyboy may be sent to a boys' home. So let's talk about this. So, so Dally finally comes in to the picture. He goes, "Man, what you guys been doing?" And so, come to find out, he died. Ponyboy's hair is now dyed. Is now cut short, just as his own friend's is also cut short. But he doesn't dye his hair.
No.
Which is kind of weird because I would think that you would also want to dye your hair too.
Yeah. I didn't really understand why Johnny didn't, like, what the reason Johnny didn't dye his hair, but it was a big deal for them to, I mean, because remember, part of being a greaser is having the great hair. So dyeing the hair and cutting the hair was a really big deal for them. Like, Ponyboy even complained the whole time and he's like, no, I don't want to do that. But they're like, nope, you got to do it, dude. So they do it. And, you know, and then Dallas shows up and kind of makes fun of Ponyboy for the short hair. And then they go to the Dairy Queen.
Right.
Which so, I loved it.
We I love the Dairy Queen setting.
We had a Dairy Queen in my town.
You know what? We have one as well in Boston. And we also had one in Mississippi where I'm at now. But, you know, it's not the same as a drive-through Dairy Queen. There's nothing like that.
No. No, and we actually had a drive-through A&W when I was growing up. And that was they had these terrible screens that, like, you would yell in and you couldn't hear them talking. And they'd bring the food on trays like you see in the movies.
Yep, like Sonic back in the day.
Yes, yep. It was like Sonic, but it was awesome. So that's what it reminded me. The Dairy Queen had a lot of nostalgia. So then, you know, they're eating because they haven't really eaten anything but bologna sandwiches. And then those kids come up to them and they end up leaving and going back up to the church. And that's where they find the people and the fire. And Ponyboy and Johnny, they don't even really think twice about it, right? They both run in and Dallas is mad.
Yeah, because at this point, remember, they're inside the car with Dally. And Dally tells them, look, you don't have anything to worry about. Cherry is going to be telling the judge that it was self-defense. You guys are good to go. And Johnny's like, that's great. That means we don't have to be on the run anymore. We can actually turn ourselves in and would be good. And Dallas is like, no, you're not going to turn yourselves in. I'm like, why wouldn't they want it? Why wouldn't you want that for them?
Right.
Is my point. I'm like, they're off the hook.
Yeah.
Not unless he's trying to protect their innocence to where they can live their own.
Yeah, I think he's trying to protect their reputation, but I also think, you know, just having, you know, come from prison and seeing the justice system, he's still worried it might not work out for Johnny.
That's true. I didn't think about that because he was just let go. And then to see his brother now having to do the same thing he did, it's kind of like watching it in real time where it's like surreal, where it's like, that was the life that I lived. And now I'm witnessing it being played out with my own brother. And I don't want the same outlook that my brother is having.
Yeah,
I had that for my brother.
I think he's just so weary of what could happen to any of them at any time that's mm-hmm. really why he didn't want to go back. But, you know, Johnny's like, no, we're going back. And so they went. I guess I never really understood why they went back to the church anyway, because they didn't really have anything there.
Other than bologna sandwiches. Bologna and sandwiches. The gun. Oh, well,
the book?
They had the Gone with the Wind book. They had to go back for that.
I mean everybody needs their copy of Gone with the Wind, but I mean obviously they needed to have that scene in there in order for the rest of the movie to happen.
What did you think also too, like, before Dallas shows up is Johnny and also Ponyboy talking about the sunset and stuff. It does have I'm just going to say this. It reminded me of a Gone with the Wind kind of moment for that.
Yeah.
To have that monologue between the two of them.
Yeah.
And I really loved it.
That's when he recites the poem, Nature's First Green is Gold, Her Heart is You to Hold. Her early leaves a flower, but only so an hour, and I forgot the rest of it. I used to have it memorized.
Damn. You did better than I did. I just want to say.
I love Robert Frost just independently of the book, so... he's one of my favorite poets, so I did have it, but I don't anymore. But anyway, that's if anybody hears somebody say "Stay Gold," that's what it comes from. But that scene is really beautiful, where Johnny's like, you know, this is the first time I've seen a sunset, and then Ponyboy recites the poem, and then they kind of have a talk about what does that mean, like what could that mean, and it's just a really lovely moment.
I love that moment between them because of the fact it's like, analyzing a poem and geeking out with your friends, like, what does that mean to you?
Right.
Because does it mean the same thing to me as it does for you?
Right. And then everything changes the next day. I think it's the next day or short. You know, I think they're up there for 3 days or 4 days. Or he
three
comes
or four
on
days.
The fourth. I think Dallas comes on the fourth day.
Yeah, and he comes on the fourth day. Also, too, Johnny also falls asleep with a cigarette in his hand, which also caused the church to catch on fire. I'm like, I thought to myself, wouldn't the church catch on fire before the fourth day? But, well, you know.
Yeah, I was kind of thinking maybe the kids were playing with the matches or something. I mean, they never really say, but I mean, I always assumed it was Johnny that started the fire by
accident. Me too.
Maybe it just took a long time to smolder because it was mostly concrete. Who knows, right? True. I mean, right. For whatever reason, it went up and
right
at that moment with this. I also wondered, John, like, why are they having a field trip to an abandoned church that's clearly dangerous?
Maybe the kids had to use the bathroom, Beth. It's like, you know what, kids? We're out in the country. You know, we're going to pull off on the side of the road and everything. Tommy, yeah, you don't run off. Just piss near the church and you're right. All right, okay?
Right.
Just don't go inside the church.
Right. It was just, it's so strange that they were even there. But, you right. know, maybe it was so beautiful they have picnics there, whatever. So then we find out that, you know, like you said, Johnny is very, very, very injured from the burns. Mm-hmm. I think he broke his back too, right?
Yeah, he broke his back because the thing that I like about it is they don't even question it. They just know that they have to go in. And then you have Dallas going, what the hell are you doing? You need to get and come back inside the car and go, because people can actually know who you are if you don't. So I like that whole entire moment. It's like, look, we got to go in. We got to do this. You have Pony Boy who winds up coming out first. Mm-hmm. And he's actually laying on the ground filled with smoke in his lungs and stuff.
But otherwise, uninjured.
Yeah, and then you have Dally that was about to run in for Johnny, but at that time, the church collapsed on him, which caused his back to go up, which caused him to actually ruin his back.
Yeah. Wait, it's a little graphic, and it's frightening, that scene.
It is, because I wasn't expecting what I saw once we actually see what Johnny is dealing with.
Yeah.
You feel bad for him.
Yeah, the aftermath, when he goes to visit, they go to visit him in the hospital, and he's like, and then he's passing out from pain, and it's just terrible. And also, the nurses and the doctors are not very nursey and doctory.
No, the bedside manner is horrible. If this was in today's time, it would be like a one-star review. If I could leave no stars, I would.
Just like Dallas is like, I hate it here.
I would too. But I like that moment though too in the waiting room with the teacher. He goes, boys, you're a hero. Yeah. He goes, yeah, well, you're not gonna, once you actually know who I am, you're not gonna think of me even more. He goes, what's that? He goes, I'm a greaser. And then he looks, and the teacher looks at him and goes, well, son, don't smoke. He goes, why? You're smoking. So I like that little funny moments that you have before you get up to that point with Johnny.
Mm-hmm. Because there's the scene. Then right after that, this Daryl comes in.
Yeah.
And so you have this sort of beautiful scene where they reconcile and they're hugging and crying. And I should say Soda Pop Daryl and Pony Boy are like kind of become one unit again. And I think that's where Pony Boy realizes that Daryl loves him. He just didn't see it before. But Daryl was like torn apart. You could tell just by like, he thought, I thought we lost you. And they just hugged for the longest time. And it's lovely. I really like that scene. I think
you needed that moment though, too. It's like, just because we argue does not mean I hate you. It just means that we had a disagreement. You don't have, it doesn't mean that I don't love you any less. Right. So I think that moment was really critical for them to have. And I'm happy that we had that emotion to it.
Yeah.
And then you get interrupted with the nurse and say, look, Johnny is awake. Come see him. So you come see him. He's laying on his stomach. Mm-hmm. And it looks like one of those old school sunbathing chairs, doesn't it?
Right.
Because it has like...
Yes, totally. Maybe it was, and they just put it in there hoping that nobody would notice.
Right.
No, you're right. I mean, then you go in and you see how badly, and I don't know if it's that scene or later on. I think it's later on when he's actually on his back and you can see the burns on his neck.
It's
quite bad.
And you feel bad for him. Like you said, he's passing out when he's talking. He's in pain. This part made me tear up because he goes, you know what? I always wanted to kill myself, but now I don't, because there's a lot of stuff that I know that I haven't done in my life. I'm going to be 18 years old, and knowing that I can't experience the things that I want to experience is now taken away from me.
Right.
And now I want to live.
And then it's even more heartbreaking because he asked Dallas, are my parents coming? And Dallas is like, or was it then or like that might, maybe it's actually later when Dallas is released. And he's like, doesn't matter about your parents, you know, because his parents aren't coming. So there he is, like severely injured, and he knows his parents don't care.
Well, in my thing is, in my version, the mother comes.
Oh, did she?
The mother comes.
Was she awful?
Well, this is what happens. The nurse says, hey, Johnny, your mom's here. Do you want to see her? He goes, no, I don't want to see her. I don't want anything to do with her. So he shuns her away. And then the mother, you actually get to see the mother. You actually get to see what she looks like in the ER. And she goes, what does he mean? He doesn't want to see me. I'm his mother. Well, ma'am, he doesn't want to see you.
Wow.
So you get a little bit more of emotional debt with that scene. But I think that the theatrical version is better because you actually have that brokenness within him.
Yeah.
Having this broken home that no one loves him or appreciates him, but all except Pony Boy and, of course, Daryl.
Yeah. And I think that I don't think he realizes how severely injured he is at the time. Like, I think he thinks he might recover. I mean, he knows he's never going to walk again. He says that. But I think he still thinks he's going to survive everything.
Like, right, and then
he's going to survive the wounds and stuff.
Exactly. And then they also send, I think they send Daryl or Dally down to the gift shop to get Gone with the Wind.
Yeah.
The gift shop.
Yeah. You're right. I forgot about that, even though I just saw it the other night. So much going on at the end, and you're just like struggling emotionally to like figure out.
It tears you up.
Yeah.
It's to the point where you're not thinking clearly, they're not thinking clearly.
No, I cried so hard at the end. It's because so much happens in such a short period of time. I mean, this whole movie from beginning to end is less than 10 days.
That's crazy to think about, right? It's like, this is only like a 10-day journey up for them, but it feels like, I think when you're younger, every time just moves slowly.
Right.
So you're not really thinking about how fast those days are going because you're on the run. You're having to survive. You're having to do a low profile to get food and have bologna sandwiches and also to lay low for a while until Dally comes. So your days are actually going by more quickly in adult time, but in kids' time, it's going by slow.
That's a great point. It's so true. And you can see it in this film.
Yeah.
Because now they're all back and they're all adults again. They all have to be. And here we have, you know, and then Dallas gets released from the hospital, obviously. And then and then the inevitable happens and Johnny dies. And so this sets off another chain reaction that you're not expecting, right? You're like, oh my gosh, that's terrible. Johnny dies. And then Dallas goes and makes some very poor decisions. And I'll let you tell it if you want to.
No, it's fine. I'll be glad to let you take the reins a little bit on that. I hated that Dallas died also.
Yeah, that was so sad. Yeah, because he goes to the, so he has a gun that he gets in the hospital. Right, the gun he gets in the hospital, or was it the knife?
It was a gun that he was carrying, because remember, at Dairy Queen, he had the gun in his hand.
Yes, that's right.
And the girls were coming up to him, and he goes, hey, get out, what you doing?
Yeah.
And she goes, sir, do you have 32 cents? No, I don't have 32 cents. Go away. He goes, oh, that was a close one.
Yeah.
Because, but... You know, and then you don't realize that the gun's going to come played out later on.
Yeah.
In the hospital scene.
Yeah. Well, and it ends up being, I mean, it really does end up being murder by, what do they call that? Murder by cop? Because he goes to the pharmacy. It's a pharmacy, right? He goes to, or is it a liquor store?
It was just like a liquor store, or just a convenience store.
And he puts a gun in the cops, in the
clerk's
face. Thank you. And then the police start chasing him. And then, of course, it's like kind of happens a little bit slow motion, but he ends up pulling the gun, and he ends up getting killed. And it's just the saddest scene. Like, he's on the ground, like, trying to, I don't know if he didn't know what happened or whatever, but he's, like, moving, like, crawling almost. And then he collapses in the street. And again, you have this beautiful cinematic overhead view of what's going on. Like, sometimes the camera just moves above, and it's just, it's amazing. So you kind of see it from above, almost like a bird's eye view of what happens.
The cool thing for me was when you see the, because remember when you actually have Patrick Swayze's character, he's like, look, we got to hide him. He called us up. We have to hide him.
Yeah.
And so he's like, okay, well, we'll hide him. But at that point, it's also too fast for him, for them to even react or do anything, because the cops are already chasing him.
Right.
By the time the guys get up to him, they already shot him. And I like how we have that wide angle shot. Then you see a shadow fall down on the ground and he dies.
Yeah. It's on the big screen. It's a pretty amazing moment in the movie. But yeah, because then he runs to the phone booth, for those of you who remember what a phone booth is, to call and ask for help, but it's too late by then. I mean, it's hard to say what Dally was thinking when he did all of that, because I don't think he expected the consequences, obviously, or he wouldn't have called for help.
Well, if you remember, this now sets up for like a revenge plot.
Right.
Because now they want to avenge Johnny's death.
Right.
So by doing that, they want to do a rumble.
The rumble!
The rumble
in the park!
Exactly. So now they want to be a rumble. This feels like West Side Story to me.
It's so weird, especially like when they're getting ready for the rumble, because apparently you get ready for rumbles. And if you remember, they come out of the house like, oh, nobody in this neighborhood's going to say anything. And Tom Cruise's character like does that backflip off the car. Remember that?
Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So they're all like, oh, we're going to rumble. And then they're like, Pony Boy, take a little one. Don't get beat up.
They were going to let Pony Boy not even go because he's running a temperature.
Yeah, because he's sick. But he's pretending not to be, or trying not to be. Then they get to the rumble and they're all like, we're going to do this like men, no weapons. And that's where we see Daryl, who meets a guy he played football with on the high school football team. And I think that's where you realize just how much Daryl is different from everybody else and how much he's had to give up in order to, like, they shake hands and then beat the crap out of each other.
Right. Because that's what I was telling my wife. That's what I was telling Brandy. I'm like, wait, they had a sit down and they said, at the end of the day, you're still going to be a greaser. I'm still going to be a sock. And they shook hands and then they go on hand and fight. I'm like, that should have been it. That's the sit down. It's basically, I know who you are, who you are, and I am who I am. And that's it.
Right.
But it sets up for a whole rumble because they want revenge on the fact that Bob was the one who was also responsible for all of this, in a sense.
The one thing I didn't love about this scene is suddenly it starts raining.
Let's add more cinematic.
Yeah, it actually lost something because it wasn't really clear. And maybe that was intentional. You're not even sure who was who at some points because it's dark and it's raining. And, you know, now there's mud flying and it's kind of dumb.
It's dumb, but I understand what they're going for. Dramatic effect, mud, guys are a muscle and they're greasers, and they want to show the masculinity by being in mud, but you also have the preppy guys who's getting their ass kicked in sweaters and tennis outfits.
Like, when you're a jet, you're a jet.
Right, exactly. That's what it feels like. It feels like West Side Story. It's like, when you're a sock, you're a sock. And then I got a blade. Oh no, what am I gonna do? Yeah.
Gonna do a little dance with the blade.
Right. Let's for the rumble.
The Michael Jackson video with
Beat It.
Yeah, Beat It when they got the knives and they're tied to each other.
You know what? Like, now I want someone to actually do a Michael Jackson, do the thing with the Beat It in there with that fight and see how it gets played out.
I wonder if Michael Jackson stole that idea from the rumble.
It would be neat if he did.
Yeah, because I'm pretty sure that would have come out after maybe not, I don't know. But I mean, that's what I was thinking. Like, and they wrap their hand and they're like,
I'll be real with you though. The music for the rumble for me, for the extended cut, was so fucking loud.
Oh, was it? I think it was kind of loud in the movie too. Maybe not as loud as what you had in your cut, but it was still kind of loud because there was no dialogue.
No, really.
You could hear grunts and stuff, but there weren't nobody was like, so should we maybe have a conversation right now?
Right. So after I get done beating the shit out of you, do you want to go for coffee? What's going on?
The greasers won. Woo! Raise the roof. And then they're at the house, cleaning up their shit. Well, Pony Boy went to the hospital and finds out. Right? Is that when he finds out? But anyway, Daryl's got his lip all cut up and they're all in pain and stuff back at the house and stuff afterwards. So while the greasers won, did they really win?
I think they won.
Yeah.
I really think that they won.
Yeah, but did they gain anything from it? Because they're always going to be greasers, right?
Right, exactly. That's what the guy said. That's what the leader said.
Right.
He goes, you may win, but you're still going to be a greaser. I'm still going to be a sock.
Right. And that's what happened.
Right. And whenever those cars pull up, you're not sure if they're going to even win this.
Right.
At all. And then I like how it shows, the camera angle shows everybody in the greaser gang.
Mm-hmm.
As well. So I'm like, okay, so there is a chance that they could probably win this.
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, if you think about it and you see how much fighting is going on in this movie beforehand, they already have the advantage of just knowing how to fight.
True.
You know,
they already do.
Yeah, because the socials probably aren't getting into a lot of rumbles, I would imagine.
No.
I think they're probably having tennis rumbles or maybe at the golf
course. That's about it, with their tennis rackets or something. Yeah, but that's about it.
They're not regularly having to defend themselves in any way, and I think the greasers kind of do.
That's what I'm thinking too. I'm thinking that they don't really get into many fights or anything. I'm thinking that this is actually their first big blowout fight.
Agreed.
Yes. And they don't really know how to defend themselves. They're preppy kids with silver spoons in their mouth.
Right. I think so. Although I think that if anyone's going to get out of it, I think at some point Pony Boy would have left that place.
I think so too. I really do. And I think I would love to actually, I wish that they would actually change it to where, you know, Johnny winds up was in a coma and then he wakes up. You know what I mean? And then at least it feels like they were fighting for something. Because moment, they come back and they try to tell him, hey, look, we won. It's like, wait, we did all this for nothing?
Right. I mean, the tragedy is, I agree with you, but I don't know that there was really any other way to do it. But it's just so tragic that two of them die, you know, and then he comes back home and he's like, you know, Johnny's dead. And I mean, I think the moment is just so devastating for everybody that they just don't even know really how to process it, you know. Or I mean, and we really don't know about the end scene how long. Well, it had to have been shortly after because he still had blonde hair, I think, right?
Right. He still had blonde hair.
Yeah. So again, it must have happened pretty quickly when he sat down and wrote out that I used to have that memorized too. Because the first line and the end lines were the same and I was so moved by that because I'd never read a book that kind of tied everything together like that before.
Right.
But I don't have it memorized anymore, so I can't recite it for you, John.
It's okay. I'm sad, though. but, you know, I want to just point this out. I think Dally is just a tragic character.
Yeah.
You knew from the moment he got out of jail that is probably going to be either go back to the pen for him because he's institutionalized or he's going to be wind up dead somewhere on the streets later on in the future. It just so happens to be Johnny's death is what did it for him.
Right. I agree. I agree 100%. I think that if he was not a character who died in the book, he would have been a character who died at some point before everybody else in some way that wasn't natural or long life.
Exactly. Either he would go back to prison, die in the prison, or he would die out on the streets with robbing someplace.
Agreed.
So either way it goes, his fate has already been decided.
Right. Right.
So
I don't know how happy Johnny would have been in his life either because he was so sad. But I mean, I think he could have figured something out for himself.
I think he would have been happy. I think he would have actually been happy with Pony Boy. I think him and Pony Boy would actually be good friends still.
Right.
And he had a reason to live because of their friendship.
Right.
Other than that, that's the only thing that they have going for each other.
That's true.
then we get into this other thing where turning the pages of Johnny's copy of Gone with the Wind, Ponyboy finds a letter from Johnny saying that saving the children was worth sacrificing his own life. Mm-hmm. The story ends and it begins with Ponyboy writing a school report about his experience. Yeah. So back to where we were at the very beginning of it.
And I think the line is something like, when I stepped out of the darkness of the movie theater, or into the light from the darkness of the movie theater, or something. It was really a beautiful line, but no, I can't remember. But yeah, that's how it ends. It's very, I mean, you don't find out like if he ends up getting removed from the family, the brothers, but I don't think he does. I mean, in my mind, if we don't find out, he doesn't, but we don't know. And we don't know what happens to him after he graduates high school or anything. We don't know anything more than that.
This is me speculating on things, okay? So with Patrick Swayze's character, I believe that he would want the best for Ponyboy.
Yeah.
So that, and also too, don't forget, you actually had one brother that flunked out of school. Mm-hmm. You already knew what he wanted to do. School life is not for him. That's perfectly fine.
Yeah.
So you have at least one person that's in the family that wants to go to school and do something different away from everything. Because what may work for somebody else doesn't work for everybody.
Right on.
So I think that he's going to still support his brother no matter what.
Yeah.
In the movie, in the extended cut, it shows him flunking out, basically flunking one of his classes.
Yeah.
And so in order to make the grade up, he has to write this paper.
Right.
And then he goes, well, what do I write? He goes, write what you know.
Right. So maybe he becomes a writer or like goes off to college or something like that and like leaves the area. I feel like Daryl and probably Soda Pop would have gone off and gotten married and had kids and just lived a nice life. I mean, because Soda worked at the gas station and presumably knew how to work on cars. So, and
maybe Daryl, he opens up his own mechanic shop or something.
And Daryl was a roofer. So they both have skill sets that you need. You know, there's no way nobody's going to, I mean, they're always going to be useful skill sets that they can always make a living with. Of course, with Daryl, it would be a little more difficult if he injured himself or something, but you know, they're hardworking people. So I think that they had that going for them.
I think so too, because they have a trade. They have a way to make money.
Exactly.
So yeah.
So definitely we're going to say that everybody else lived happily ever after.
Exactly. That's how I feel about it too, Beth. That's exactly how I feel about it.
That's
so now that we stripped away the nostalgia and stuff, I'm going to have to say this. I was in NA before because of the fact that I didn't grow up with this film and stuff. And so I'm going to go an 8.8 out of 10 because I just loved it. It's not a long movie. You don't feel the pacing with it. No. It's a fast-paced movie, and I'm not saying that that's a bad thing because of the fact that it's just as fast for them.
Yeah.
I love the soundtrack with it. I love the chemistry between the brothers. Patrick Swayze is always going to be GOAT for me. Same thing with everybody else. Matt Dillon. You also have Ralph Macchio. Come on. You have an all-star cast that was before they're in their prime, before they were famous.
Right.
This is how you direct a great movie. And you gave us a lot.
Right. Yeah, I think for me, you're right. The pacing is very fast. And when I was a teenager, that almost bothered me how fast paced it was and whatever. But it didn't bother me as much watching it as an adult. I would put it, but I still think they could have slowed it down a little bit, you know. But I would put it at a 9 out of 10, I think. You know, I didn't love the rumble scene, but for the most part, and there weren't any scenes that were just there. There were no extraneous scenes. There were no scenes that would have, had they been removed, would have changed the film in any way. So I think that was really a great thing that they did. And, you know, of course it's directed by Francis Ford Coppola. So he was huge. It was almost strange that he would pick that movie because he didn't do a lot of coming of age teenage films. That might have been his only one, you know.
Right, because normally the one that we always talk about is John Hughes for coming of age.
Right, exactly.
This is more of a serious movie than anything for a coming of age story.
Right. It is. I mean, he did a really good job, especially at being true to the book itself. And part of that might be because they wanted it to be shown at some point in high schools and stuff. So, or for whatever reason, but I would give it a 9. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it as much as I did when I was a kid. I would have probably said 15, you know, just because there's so many cute actors in it, but I would say 9.
Okay. That's fair.
I was going crazy when I was 14.
I understand. I totally understand that Tiger Beat magazine was your life. I got it.
Come on.
And those posters. I got you. I totally get it.
A subscription to Tiger Beat.
So that's going to be it as far as this goes. Thank you again, Beth. It's always a pleasure to have you on the show.
Thank you, John.
I always have a good time with you. You're very welcome. So, guys, that's going to be it. Don't forget to smash that like button, subscribe button, all that other good stuff over here. I believe there's night, and always until next time. Bye-bye.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply. For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.